Dear poor Ebony, she's out in the airlock. I'm sure she will somehow bring herself back in, like in Star Wars when Princess Leia, like, beamed herself back in, like, whatever the fuck she did. Yeah, she, like, flies through space somehow. Ebony will do that at some point, somehow. Hello, and welcome to a new episode of the Star Trek Discovery Recap Freakcast. I'm your host, Anita Sarkeesian, and my normal co-host, the one and only Ebony Adams, got thrown out of an airlock for bad behavior because she's a monster. So we have a very special guest this week, Jarrah Hodge.
Live long and prosper. Good to be here.
Perfect. Before we get into it, I just want to remind our super faithful, loyal, wonderful three listeners that this podcast and all of Feminist Frequency podcasts are ad-free and fully supported by you. So please help us keep making these every week by pitching in a few bucks at d.rip/femfreak. On this week's show, we're going to be giving you our thoughts about Saints of Imperfection, episode number 5 of Star Trek Discovery's second season. I'm really excited to have a special guest this week with me, whose name I always fuck up. I'm so sorry. I'm just going to put that out there because I feel like I'm going to do it. And so you can correct me and then nobody thinks you're an asshole for correcting me. It's great. Jarrah.
Yep.
Yeah? Yes. Jarrah is one of the co-hosts of Women. I've known you for so long. It's embarrassing that I'm like, how do I say your name? All right.
That's okay, Anite.
Yeah, great. I will accept that from you. All right. Jarrah is one of the co-hosts of Women at Warp, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast where four women talk about Star Trek, its representations of women, contributions of women behind the scenes, and other fun Trek topics. She also blogs about feminism and women's issues at TrekkieFeminist.com. I love it. I love that you're doing that. And I think everyone should subscribe to your podcast.
So oh, thanks.
Go do that right now.
It's pretty fun. It's also great to have you guys out in the Star Trek podcast sphere
Is it though? Because it I fucking this show, man. It's really giving me an ulcer.
Well, when we first started Women at Warp, we were on a network with about 30 podcasts, and we were the only show that was hosted by women, and there was one woman host on one of the other shows.
Oh, man.
And we've heard from a couple people who've started podcasts since going, you know, I thought, can I start a podcast? Because there's already Women at Warp. Yes, yes, you can. Because there has always been enough room for these, like, you know, 100+ podcasts that are hosted by guys. And no one was ever like, well, we already had a guy Star Trek podcast.
Right. I hate that people are like, oh, we have such a limited amount of space that we can take up. But yet men don't ever feel like that. So start your damn podcast, man. Everyone has one these days. You should have
exactly.
one, too.
Exactly. Yep.
Cool. All right. I'm excited to have you. I said this earlier, but we've known each other for a really long time. We met at GeekGirlCon.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
2014, maybe?
Yeah.
2015. Yeah, around there.
Yeah. No, earlier. Did I meet you at one of the first ones?
Yes. No, you are definitely right. Sorry. Yeah. That was 2014 was my first year at Star Trek Las Vegas. So we've been before that. Yeah.
Well, I'm excited to have. So one of the ongoing jokes is that Ebony and I have very different Star Trek knowledge when we come to the show. And basically the whole show, if you want to have any sense of Star Trek and Discovery, it's all original series, which I don't know shit about. So it's nice to have someone with a much more like detailed knowledge or refined knowledge of Star Trek coming into our little silly podcast space. But before we get into the discussion, do you want to give us a little description of what the synopsis of this episode is?
All right. Captain's log. The search for Spock is put on hold again as Burnham and Stamets journey into the mycelial network to save Ensign Tilly. Meanwhile, the rest of the ship is stuck halfway between mycelial and normal space, and Captain Pike grapples with his new reluctant co-workers, Section 31.
Perfect. What a fucking episode. All right. Okay, so I don't know if you know this, but I kind of hated the whole first season, like, pretty aggressively. And this season has been interesting because there have been episodes that I have liked. And there are episodes that I think are getting somewhere in the sort of Star Trek environment that why I like Star Trek and why I want to be a part of this fandom still. So this, I feel like the show is finding its footing in this space where it's like, yeah, we're kind of feeling like we're having these big moments of like, what does it mean to be ethical? And what does it mean to like interact with like big emotional things? But it's still not, like, it's still a little meh to me. And I feel like this episode is very much like kind of how I was feeling about last week's episode, where I'm like, I don't hate it. Like, I like 20% of it or 30% of it. And the rest of it, I'm like, ah, this could be better. So it's kind of where I'm sitting with season two generally of the show.
Yeah, I had really low expectations going into season one, and season one therefore blew away my very low expectations. And I ended up pretty much liking it, at least until Culber died. And so I was really, really dreading this episode.
Yeah.
And I still had some complicated feels during this episode. I would say overall, it did not grab me as much as some of the other ones because I was so distracted with my brain trying to catch up with, could that science actually theoretically work?
No, the answer is no, unequivocally, no.
Yeah. It was so much so fast. But the acting was excellent. And so I just tried to focus on that.
Oh, God, the things we do to stay in this fandom. Okay, well, so I want to actually just plug in season one of our podcast. We have an amazing bonus episode that's about 15 minutes by Emily Taylor, who blew apart why everything about mycelium on this show is wrong and aggressively wrong. And it's brilliant. And hopefully we can get her to do another one about season two, because it's still all wrong. And I'm sure this episode made her brain implode a little bit.
Yeah, normally it's not even that important to me. I'm like, whatever, reverse the polarity, matter, antimatter, that shit, I'm cool. But there was so much really far-fetched science in this episode that
I didn't really care, but also the show has beaten me down so much that like I just am like, okay, fine. So in this episode, there's two major things that are happening. One is the introduction to Discovery of Section 31, and then the saving of Tilly. Like, those are the sort of A plot, B plot kind of things happening. Mm-hmm. And like, I have a question for you. Is Section 31 invented for Discovery, or is that alluded to in other Star Treks?
It was invented in Deep Space Nine.
Okay.
And by that point, the Federation denies its existence.
Okay.
Then it came back in Enterprise, which I have to admit I have not seen all of those episodes.
How dare you?
But I did read some background, because there was a lot of complaining about bringing Section 31 into Discovery when it's so disavowed by the 24th century. And apparently the idea is they're going to show how it gets from being sort of a sanctioned agency that people do roughly know about, sort of shadowy like the CIA, but it's government sanctioned, to something that the Federation denies all knowledge of.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't hate that. I don't hate that. I just don't trust this show to do it well. Like, there's a thing at the end where, so, okay, I'm going to dive right into the end of this. So the Admiral woman from the first season.
Cornwell, yeah.
Thank you. I'm really good at being prepared, clearly.
She
shows up at the very end, and she's basically like, okay, Leland and Captain Pike have to work together on this joint mission. And there's a very quick, like, I'm sorry for being a dick and I will be better. And all of a sudden they're like, cool. And she's like, you need to figure this out, because you each have different pieces of information that's going to help us find Spock and also figure out what these goddamn Red Angel signals are. And she says, we have more important things to do than follow the rules here. And that, like, it's not pretty how, like, the reality of how we, you know,
nation building is never pretty. That is the unappetizing truth, and you know it.
That is exactly what she said. Yeah. And I kind of got this, like, very physical reaction to that, because I was like, oh my God, this is first season Lorca bullshit. Like, this is everything I hate about Star Trek.
It was first season her bullshit, too.
Yeah, yeah, true.
Yeah, and I had mixed feelings about it, because I wanted to believe that in the magic finale of last season that her and Sarek and all these people had a real serious grappling with all what they came close to doing. And we're like, no, we're better than this. We all listened to that We Are Starfleet speech and we were changed people. Well, no, apparently not. But I really like Jane Brooke as Cornwell, and I sort of see some echoes of Nechayev, and Nechayev similarly advocated some pretty messed up things in TNG. And if we get a little bit of indication of pushback on that and conflict around that, then I think that that's maybe a positive way of showing how we should be responding to those types of things in our own world.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that, like, so Pike is supposed to be, like, Pike and Michael and Saru, like, Discovery, basically, as it stands in season two, is supposed to be, like, the beacon of goodness, right? Mm-hmm. It is very much operating in the space of what I would consider, like, core Star Trek. And so the fact that they just made an agreement to like, sacrifice all of those, like, ultimately what that was is that Pike is like, yes, I will sacrifice all of our moral values to do this thing because it's more important than what we hold dear, right? And it comes after his whole speech about, which was so embarrassing. Oh God, I had a moment of like, oh, just turn it off, where he's like, open a line to like the whole ship. And he says, Starfleet is a promise. Nobody's left behind. We keep our promises. And then one, he says, Godspeed. Like, I thought they weren't supposed to be religious, but whatever. It's fine. That's annoying. But it was one of those things where you're like, this is in straight, like, it's so counter to what they're trying to. It's so counter to what they did at the end. And I think that that's the point. Mm-hmm. Like, I get that that's what they're trying to do, but I don't fucking like it because I don't trust them to do it well.
Yeah, it could be tricky. I'm willing to give a little bit of benefit of the doubt because of the antagonism he displayed towards Tyler, which I'm like, that is fucking overdue, man, because I have been like, done with Tyler since mid-season one. And like, get you know, complicated stuff that he went through, but the fact that like no one really seemed to want to have a discussion about did he actually kill the doctor, and you know, and now especially that he's working for Section 31, I like that someone is distrusting him and that there can be some conflict there. I don't like the beard and I don't like having him and Burnham being back together again, but I will take Pike's side on that one.
I loved that moment where he's like, Tyler, you stay on the bridge because it's liaison protocol. And then you see him like walk into the elevator or whatever, the lift. And I was like, oh, this is so delightful. Like, I'm torn. Like, I fucking hated Tyler last season so much. But I think they really did a number on me in terms of like building sympathy in terms of how they did it when he was on what was it, Kronos, I think they called it. And like, you know, sacrificing the baby and like him and Michael, like Michael forgiving him. Like, it's hard to not see him through Michael's eyes in this season for me, because I'm like, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, and I don't know why. And maybe the beard is doing it for me. That could be it. But I've never liked Tyler very much, you know?
Yeah, I don't have anything against beards except for that it looks like he could not shower for several days and no one would notice.
I loved when we saw it, when he had his just like shaggy, he's like, I don't fucking care anymore. This is just how I am. And I'm like, cool. I'm okay with this. Oh boy. Yeah. Okay. So weird having Tyler back on the ship. That is peculiar. Mm-hmm. One thing I loved. Okay. So Ebony doesn't like this iteration of Pike. And I really like him. Like, the more I watch the show, the more I'm just like, I'm so into you. One, I totally have the hots for him, first of all. But second of all, I really, really love their relationship a lot. And I know that, like, the moment where they're in the hallway right before she goes in to see Tyler, and that conversation that they have where he's like, you're not telling me something and it's critical that you do. And she says, I need you to trust me. I will tell you when the time is right. And he said, okay. Like, yep. I fucking love that shit. There's just so much of that that they've been doing that I'm like, I'm so pleased with that relationship.
I also just loved at the beginning when they're opening a channel to what they think is Spock's shuttle, but it turns out to be Georgiou. Mm-hmm. And Pike is just like, I'm here to listen. I'm here to help. And I go, yes.
I love him. I love him so much. It's so great.
I'm just going to make that my ringtone.
Oh, please do. Please do. All right. So this going back to the Section 31 stuff, we've got we are now formally introduced to them. We now know that, like, Philippa Georgiou is, like, fully empowered to, like, do her shit. And nobody really knows that she's alt-world Philippa, except for, like, a couple of people, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, that tension is interesting. Like, at the end where Michael's just like, please tell me what you're doing. Like, what are your intentions? And you're sitting there going, she's not going to fucking tell you. But, yeah. Like, that tension, I think, is kind of interesting.
I like her. I could really take a spinoff that is just Michelle Yeoh kicks people in the face.
Right.
I don't know. It's not Star Trek, but, like, that part of the dynamic is not particularly Star Trek, but that I would still watch it.
Yeah. And here's the thing is, like, we don't, I think for, like, you know, I keep saying that I want more Star Trek, and that's because I don't want Star Wars. Like, that's, you know, like, I don't want this other bullshit that's happening, but I'm okay with other, like, I want it to evolve and grow. So I'm also okay with having these, you know, these different kinds of conflicts, these different kinds of interactions or relationships that might not feel like happy-go-lucky, but that's also building tension, and that's okay as long as it's done well and sincerely and, like, believably, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So it'll be interesting to see how they try to position her in a way that is more to the spirit of season two as opposed to season one. Like, what I'm worried about is going to happen now is that as the show probably is going to get less episodic and more into the, like, the main overarching storyline, it's going to feel a lot more like season one.
It's possible. Although I think that one of the issues season one suffered from was really in uneven pacing. And I think that they're just doing everything really fast now. And kind of trying to do arc and episode in every episode, although the Spock thing has been abandoned, I think, a little bit too long.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it. I'm really, like, I've seen the pictures of Spock. I'm like, he looks so fucking weird. I'm not looking forward to this. Like, I'm okay with them holding it off, but I don't think that that's necessarily, like, great storytelling either. You know, it's probably going to happen at the very end. Like, the last couple of episodes is when he's going to show up, I would guess.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I can't imagine at the pace they're going that they're going to do it any earlier than that.
And also, I mean, any earlier than that, he basically takes over the show by default of being Spock, I think.
Right, exactly, which would be incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, and I don't think the creators want that. I don't think the audience wants it.
Right, agreed. All right, so the Tilly stuff. So, like, I was avoiding getting to this because so much of this was so stupid. Okay, so the cocoon that Tilly is stuck in is a transporter that can transport her across dimensional planes within the mycelial network. Cool, whatever. That's so dumb, but it's fine. Here we are. It's so dumb. I'm trying to just get past it, but it's like this weird. The Jessup can just create a fucking cocoon, and then the cocoon connection can't be maintained later, like, because at the end of the section, like, May and Tilly are really sad that they can't stay in touch, which is fine. Like, I'm okay with that. But it was just so convenient that all of a sudden, in order to bring Q back, they can't.
Oh, yeah. It was like a really over-explained mycelium MacGuffin.
Yeah. It was, yes.
It could have just said, because spores, and we would have understood it as much as we did at the end.
Exactly. I did like the general premise of what you think is a monster isn't, and what I think is a monster isn't. You know, like, I didn't like the storyline at all. I didn't like how they did it. It was very frustrating to me, but I can extract myself a little bit and be like, I liked what they were trying to do, I guess, here.
Yeah, I thought that Mary Wiseman did a killer job acting in what was a pretty difficult scenario, but that was my sort of best takeaway from that part. it was like a big range for Tilly, which we don't always see, with a lot of like anger and fear and sadness. But I also didn't buy that she had enough time with May that she didn't either think she was crazy or think she was being held hostage to develop that feeling of a bond that would make her that sad to lose her, that she actually needed like consoling at the end.
So I that didn't bother me as much. And I get it. When you say it, I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right. Like, all of a sudden she's like, who is this fucking thing that's like invading my body? And now I don't want you to leave. But there was a little bit of like, well, we know each other. But they didn't explain that previously. They explained that May knew all of Tilly's thoughts, but not that Tilly knew all of May's thoughts. And they brushed that off by one line where May says something and Tilly's like, I was about to say the exact same thing. And you're like, oh, my God, really? Is this your justification? Yeah. So I loved the line at the beginning where May is trying to convince Tilly to help her or to help them, the Jessup, to get out of to deal with the monster that was created from, you know, like humans or whatever, from not humans, you know what I mean?
From Hugh understanding how to use tree bark.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And she says, like, she says, when I'm done, I'm not going to work through my anger. I'm going to let it fester for eternity. And like, I don't think a lot of the comedy on the show works, but when Tilly does it, it's so delightful. Like, oh, that yes. line was so good.
I also liked Pike being really confused by the Chesscom badges. I don't necessarily know that I like them, the Section 31 already having Chesscom badges, but yeah. Anyway, I digress.
Oh, wait. They don't have badges on... Wait,
yeah,
what?
The rest of the people still have the flip phones.
Oh my God, you're right. I never even noticed that.
Yeah, so there's a moment where Ash summons Section 31 after they're like camouflaged and he taps on his comm badge and then Pike gives him this look like, what the hell are you doing?
Oh my God, that's why. I didn't understand the confusion. Oh, wow. I'm so oblivious to that. Because I was just thinking that every time they showed the badges, it was because they were black. And the whole thing is like, oh, these black badges are so...
Well, that too.
Yeah. But
ominous. Ominous badges.
That makes so much sense. And I'm...
Badges with atmosphere.
Do they have badges in TOS?
Not communicators.
Interesting. They
have the flip communicators as well.
They all have
the
flip communicators. Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It does not stop them from communicating to each other very quickly. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I kind of feel like the tech should be a little more rickety if you're going to have, like, if you're going to try to show the evolution of tech.
Yeah. Yeah. You could have, like, a 10-second delay.
Yeah. Or, like, more times where you can't get in touch or something. I don't know. Okay. So, Hugh is the monster. We find out that Hugh is still alive. Cool. Didn't see that one coming at all.
Oh, and then they try to take him back, but he can't come back because he's dead, but he can come back because spores.
Because human spores that apparently they have access to on the other side somehow. I did not understand even what they were trying to get across here.
And the reason he's still alive is because Stamets kissed his tear while he was dying, which is just
hard. Oh my God.
So hard. I'm like, I just never want to relive that episode, period. I'm glad they appear to be sticking to their promise to bring him back. And when it seems like there's a moment where, sort of similar to how the week before you think Saru's for sure going to die, you think for sure Culber's not going to be able to come back with them. And I was so mad. I'm going like, you guys can't do this again.
Totally. And so I'm I hate Stamets. Ebony and I both fucking hate Stamets so much. So again, season two, he hasn't been that annoying, but it also is like partly because he hasn't been that prominent like he was. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, oh man, is he going to be more prominent now that Hugh is back? Like, I don't know if I want Hugh back for more Stamets. Like, this trade-off is not good for me.
Well, I mean, I think that Stamets, when he is less prickly like he was at the very beginning, is I quite enjoy him. And if he can have, I think, like, when we knew him together with Hugh, he was that character. So it'll be interesting to see if he changes. But I don't have any big problem with him.
I'm curious, too, if they're going to deal with any of the trauma. Like, if Hugh is obviously deeply traumatized, this is an intense experience. Like, are they just going to write that off? Or
no. I mean, not according to an interview I saw with Wilson Cruz after this episode aired. He said, like, we're going to have to see how this changes who he is, and said something very cryptic about where to get where they're going, he had to die.
Oh.
So, don't know what that means. But as long as they don't make him like a mirror double or something like that, I'm
what does that mean? Is he going to, do you think that it's going to have something to do with the like the Red Angel stuff?
Oh, maybe. That would actually be kind of cool.
Like, maybe because he's rematerialized or whatever, that he can communicate with it or see it or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That might be a stretch. But
yeah.
Interesting. All right. Hmm. Well, I'm excited to have more Hugh. I always liked him. Yeah. I don't know if I actually have any more to say about this episode. I didn't. It's just, it was fine. It was fine. I thought that the whole saving Tilly stuff dragged on a lot. And like, I was like, okay, got it. Can we just, how long does this need to go on for? Cool.
Yeah, it also just was so confusing, but I'm glad they're back.
Yeah, the next episode is very focused on Saru and the
going back to his planet.
Yeah, and trying to deal with like the fact that he now has this revelation about like the biological functions of his people and all the like horrific stuff that's happened. So I'm actually excited, like. The next time on Star Trek Discovery didn't look great, but I loved the idea of it. So I'm hoping I have high hopes for that episode.
Yeah, I also wanted to see more of his sister after the short treks, and also am pretty excited now that I know that partly the huts are nicknamed the Vagina Huts by the set designers, because they were, the woman who designed them was using a lot of natural geometry, and when she finished them, she's like, oh, they look kind of like women's genitalia, so.
That's amazing.
They all just call them the Vagina Huts.
I love that.
Yeah.
I wish that would make it into the show. That's so good. I haven't watched the shorts yet. I feel like the internet keeps telling me that I must, so I should probably catch up on that before the next episode.
Yeah, it's less than the length of one normal episode.
Yeah, well, part of me also, like, I kind of like to just watch, like, there's a part of me as a media critic in terms of if I'm looking at something and I'm trying to analyze it in terms of like how it is being received by the vast majority of people, I sometimes don't want to see all the extras because I just want to know like what information is being put out into the world that the majority of people are having access to. So I'm torn between like, I actually am interested in Saru's story and want to learn more. And then also just like, I tend to not go into the extras generally. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. I know Ebony watched them, so I'm sure she'll have lots of things to contribute. Okay, so dear poor Ebony, she's out in the airlock. I'm sure she will somehow bring herself back in, like in Star Wars when Princess Leia, like, beamed herself back in, like, whatever the fuck she did.
Force tractor beams herself?
Yeah, she, like, flies through space somehow. Yeah. Ebony will do that at some point, somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that means that I gotta hold down this hair report, which, man, I probably shouldn't even try. But here's what I'm gonna say. I feel like Michael's hair was looking a little lopsided. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's because the wig was all weird last episode, but like this just a little crooked. We generally am not a huge fan of her hairstyle. I wish that it was like cooler, like what's her name? Osaku?
Owashakun?
Yes. Her hair looks sharp as always and wonderful. Giorgio's hair was amazing. I keep trying to do that, like that side where you sort of like braid half your hair and then do the slick one side thing because I love it. I think I loved Ash Tyler looking like a disaster because I feel like that's just his state of being. Tilly's hair, we don't usually go into everybody's hair, but I'm just overcompensating because I can't actually talk in detail about Michael's hair. Tilly's hair, I love, love, love down. And most of this episode, it was down. Like, I like when they just let it be big and wild. And then Pike is still super hot with his little salt and pepper hairstyle. Whatever. I'm basic. It's okay. I will accept that.
Yeah, and Culber's hair was suitably post-apocalyptic.
It was very post-apocalyptic. Do you love that when he came back, though, in the cocoon, he was like perfectly shaved, yes, and his hair was cut. Like, what the fuck?
And he was perfectly naked. And he's just like, I mean, if that was me, my first thing would be, where are my pants? But no, he's just like,
so I could buy the naked thing because of like Terminator, right? Like, you know, you can't bring anything with you. But also, Tilly had her fucking uniform on in the mycelial network. So what the fuck? Come on. Whatever.
Well, plus, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of, they were in the ship, they were using things from the ship, all this stuff.
So much stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I don't know why we try to logic this shit. All right. So I'm apologize for my sad hair report. Ebony will give us something wonderful next week, I'm sure. What we missed was send it back to the holodeck where it belongs. What on this episode made no sense or was so absurd that you can't stop thinking about it?
Well, I think that the biggest thing was how they found DNA that allowed them to reconstitute Hugh. Man, it's a tie. It's really a tie between that and how he got into the mycelial network by crying at the time that Stamets was going between networks in his mind. And then also, if that happened, because they're sort of implying that his body ended up there. It's not super clear, but then, like, I was going, like, wait, does that mean that they just found the body disappeared from Discovery? Because then I have questions. And if not, why not? And then why wouldn't the DNA be back there? Yeah, there were a lot of things.
This episode is very full of just like, what in the fuck? Like, how, why, I don't, Okay, I'm going to go with something smaller here.
Mm-hmm.
It really bothered me that Discovery is literally about to implode. And I thought they built that tension quite well with the like impending network, like about to take over. And so then when they're just like hanging out, when Michael and Tilly and May and Hugh and Stamets are just hanging out, like they're having a whole fucking conversation about shit that is not urgent. Like I was literally yelling at my TV being like, come on, just you can talk about this later. And then you find out that Hugh can't even go back in. And so, of course, there's a whole nother delay. And you have the captain being like, so what's going on over there? And Michael's like, yeah, we're coming. And then it's another like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Like that pacing of that just really... Oh, God, that really
bothered
me. Well,
that would not be the first time that happened in Star Trek. But can I add another small thing that this doesn't baffle me, but I think is worth remarking on, and I'm interested to hear what you think about the fact that Nan is now apparently officially the new chief of security.
Yeah, was she always that?
No. So, I mean, this this is interesting, and it's significant because there was a lot of criticism after they killed off Landry in season one for, you know, you made a woman of color chief of security, and then you killed her off, and then you killed off Culber, and, like, why are you killing off all your people of color? Mm-hmm. So now they have another alien woman of color, who is going to be chief of security. She came over from Enterprise and she was wearing a red uniform, so could have been security or engineering. But they just said, well, she's the new chief of security. Like, she was in that conference scene the week before, and I'm pretty sure they didn't say that's her job. She was just kind of standing there.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah. That didn't even occur to me. I just assumed that I forgot something and that she was just, because she'd been around for a few episodes, that, yeah, that is a very good, interesting observation.
Yeah, I'm going to reserve judgment for the moment, because my only thought was, okay, well, you just made her chief of security, and then she got, like, one more line in the entire episode, which was move, when she was trying to move people out of a corridor.
Right.
And so, you know, it's not just about the fact that you have a woman of color in that particular position, but it's the fact that she has some, like, profile and interest as a character. So I think they could still do that, and we will wait and see.
Yeah, fair. Oh, can we talk a little bit about, you had tweeted recently about a panel you were on or an event, and I was interested in the stuff around disability. And, you know, we have commented on the fact that there is a crew member in a wheelchair in the background, but is never, like, really acknowledged, or it's not a main character by any means.
Yep. Yeah. I was at a panel that was hosted by the Directors Guild of Canada in Toronto. So I wasn't on the panel, but I attended. And it was their members, including the art director, the production designer, and several set and graphic designers. And one of the audience members asked what I thought was a really awesome question, which was, you know, we saw last season, and I believe in the episode where they're all running in the halls earlier this season, the same crewman in a wheelchair. He's played by an actor named George Alavizos, but he's never received, like, he's never been credited because he's never had lines. The person in the audience asked, so did you know that you were going to have characters in wheelchairs, and did you take that into account when you were designing the sets? And so Tamara Deverell, who's the production designer, started out by saying, actually, first of all, she said, yes, absolutely. The Discovery is wheelchair friendly. Part of that, I mean, it's nice to say that, but it's also partly just a practicality that they have cameras on dollies that need to go everywhere. They did apparently also think about that. She said, though, that what I thought was more interesting was they actually thought about and wanted to have a lead character in a wheelchair. And she said, we knew it was so important to cast an actor who actually uses a wheelchair, which is why we cast George Alavizos as in this role. So that's the right answer, except for it kind of implied they couldn't find someone who was capable of being a lead actor. And then also, you gave this guy the role and then he still hasn't even had a line or a credit. So it's yet to me to prove that it's not tokenism. That said, I think, like, I was, I guess I would say I appreciated the level of thought in the answer, because she did also talk about how they had had many conversations behind the scenes about why it was very important not to advance a narrative about a cure, and to this, you know, put forward an idea that, well, in the 23rd century, disability will be cured and we won't need wheelchairs anymore, that, like, this is a valid identity and we don't want to erase that or imply that it's, like, pathological. So I thought that was halfway decent. And then also said, we will be seeing more wheelchairs. And the person who designed the wheelchair for that crew member and will be doing the other ones, who's one of their prosthetics designers, actually did wheelchair design work in outside of the film industry. So they're trying to make them, like, very functional, but also look futuristic.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So this is one of those things with, like, when you watch a show, you don't have any of this information, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of like, this is great that they're having these conversations and like the detail to which that conversation is happening. But like, we still haven't seen, like, it's not actually a character, right? Like, there's nothing. So I am curious if that is actually going to change or not, and like how long it's going to take to have someone in a wheelchair on the bridge crew, for example. If you look at the bridge crew, it is a pretty like diverse group of people in terms of race. But like half of them don't talk or do anything or whatever. Like it's important to see the visual of that, but it's not like they're actually doing anything or like that they're actual characters. I can't even fucking remember their names half the time.
It's getting better this season. I did appreciate a couple of the times when the bridge crew have all been, you know, at least talking to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit.
Although
more.
I really feel like if Pike is going to call Oashekun Oo, that he has to start making nicknames for everyone. He has to be like Dets, Burns.
Did he call her Oo? That's so cute.
Yeah, he calls her Oo. It's cute, but I feel like it's
right.
Given that she has like the most non European sounding name, also a little bit problematic.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, it's like I know a lot of people who just, you know, I can't even bother pronouncing that person's name.
For sure.
You know, if they had had her at some point go like, oh, just call me Oo, then that's fine.
But that would be totally different. I did love that we got a little bit of backstory from her, and I'm hoping that we get more. I would love the exploration of that. But all right.
Well, I mean, and just sorry, quickly on the wheelchair thing. Please. I mean, there is speculation. Are we going to see Pike in a wheelchair? Because that's where that character ends up in the original series. And if they try to do it better, they couldn't really do it worse. So I would be down for that.
That would also imply that you're then having an able-bodied person playing some disabled person, which would be very frustrating.
True. Yeah, that's true. But if they, if it's sort of like the end of an arc, but they do it in a way that isn't like in the original series, it's basically that his life is not worth living that because he's disabled, and they send him to a world where he can just live in mental fantasies the whole time because it's better than being confined to his broken body.
Oh my God, that's terrible.
Yeah, it's so bad.
Holy shit.
I mean, yeah, definitely does not take care of the issue around casting an able-bodied actor as a person in a wheelchair, but also could have some benefits in terms of having a character we know and love and learning to appreciate that they're also capable in different ways in a wheelchair.
Yeah. Okay. God, I've learned so much about Star Trek having you on this episode. I really should watch the original series one day. It's probably never going to happen. let's just be honest. All right, let's rate the episode. Let's point out of 10 stars, thumbs up, however you want to rate it.
All right.
What do you think?
I'm going to rate this 6. Let's say 6 spore cocoons.
I don't know if that's good or bad.
It's good because they have magic powers.
They're so magic. I actually wrote magic somewhere in my notes because I was just like, I don't fucking know. Oh, I know where I wrote it. I wrote it when Tyler calls Section 31. It was like, oh, magic communications. Like, they can magically appear and help us. Like, where the fuck? They've just been hanging out. Like, I didn't even realize that they were around. It felt very magical. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to give it. So, again, grading on a curve. This is not in relation to actual good media in the world. So grading on a curve of season 2, I'm going to even further do this because there have been some episodes I actually liked. I think this episode was like a 5.5 out of 10 or like a C minus or like a C. Like it had so much stupid shit. And like, I didn't hate it, but I also am like, man, you're kind of regressing a little bit here. So I'm still here and I'm still going to hope that it gets better. But this was not the episode for me. All right. That's it for this week. Thank you so, so much for being our guest. It was a pleasure having you on. I'd love to have you on again.
That was fun.
Yeah. Where can folks find out more or get in touch or all the things.
Well, you can check out our podcast. You can find more information at womenatwarp.com, or you can find me on Twitter at JARRHPenguin.
Perfect.
That's my name plus the word penguin.
Perfect. Join us next week and every week to see what's up on the USS Discovery and whether I can find the will to keep going. And if you like the show or our main show, Feminist Frequency Radio, help us keep making it. Head over to d.rip/femfreak to become a show backer and get access to exclusive perks. Or use the transporter. You know Ebony wrote this shit. Use the transporter to head to feministfrequency.com to make a one-time but very appreciated donation. If you'd like to support the show but don't have any gold press platinum, we would still love for you to rate and review the show on iTunes so, you know, other people can find us and listen to all of the wonderful and absurd things we have to say. All right, y'all. Big thanks go out to our producer, Taylor Simmons, and Sarah Norales for technical support, and Ray Avalar for design wizardry. We will see you next week. Bye.